You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. We got a lot of baseball news talking. Luckily for us, the Royals just made some news right before we went on air. But we will get to that shortly. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Hurr. With me, as always, is the indubitable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm swamped with a lot of stuff, but I'm good.
Life stuff. Life stuff,
yeah.
You know, it tends to happen. Being an adult, in many ways, is all it's cracked up to be, and in many ways, is not.
It sucks in a lot of ways, but it's
all
right. For all
you kiddies out there, there's a lot of crap you have to worry about, but it's nice to be able to do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, for anybody listening, I'm just moving. It's like nothing significantly
weird
or problematic. It's just a pain in the butt to clean out an apartment.
Yeah, and part of this with Mike moving, and then I'm getting married here in a couple of weeks, so we've had it's been kind of touch and go with some things, which is why our schedule hasn't been that. But hopefully, in about a month or so, once all this stuff is done with, we'll have this. We'll have the schedule right back on track just in time to end the season. Now, how does that sound?
Perfect timing.
Just like the Royals, we'll get back on track right when it's too late.
Right. Exactly.
Speaking of which. The Royals, in an effort to try and play beyond our expectations of September, I won't say that to begin with, because I just assume that's kind of what they're doing. But we'll start with we'll do a recap here of what's happened since the last show. But we'll start with the breaking news here that's happened literally just minutes before we went on air. Yep, it's coming over across the wire. The Royals, in a trade sure to just turn this season completely around, have sent Danny Valencia, third base platoon extraordinaire, to Toronto for pitcher Liam Hendricks, who is in AAA right now, and apparently, from what I understand, will be sent to AAA in Omaha with the Royals. I saw that on Twitter. And then, along with that, they got... what's the guy's name, Mike?
Eric Kratz. That's a good sign when you can't remember other guys.
Yes. So Kratz is a catcher, no doubt meant to be a backup catcher. Brett Hayes was designated for assignment. And Christian Colon will be called backup to the majors. So with this, Dayton Moore kind of gets another pitcher for the system, Liam Hendricks. I mean, he's put up some okay numbers. He spent most of his time with Minnesota. I'm not sure how he got to Toronto. I know him by name, but I'm not exactly super familiar with him. And then Kratz seems more like a throw-in and just kind of a sort of fills a need. But I don't know that he presents that much more of a better option than Brett Hayes. But it does give them a little bit more versatility when you can bring up Christian Colon, who can play more than one position, supposedly, as opposed to Valencia, who apparently could only play third base, or at least only play it well.
Theoretically, Mike, on paper, he could play third base.
Yes. Mike, give me your first impressions from this here.
My first impression was, huh? Because it's just such an out-of-nowhere weird move. I mean, Hayes has been kind of overdue to be out of this spot for a while. He doesn't really hit that well. He's not a very good defensive catcher. It just seems like he's kind of the guy because they haven't really had to rely on a backup catcher that often. But now, I guess, as you kind of see, you know, Eric Hosmer is getting past this wrist injury. So Billy Butler's been playing some first base, which kind of leaves DH as kind of a rotating spot. And, the other day they had Sal Perez batting as the DH. So maybe that's a sign that Hosmer's not back soon. I mean, I don't know. I think the idea was that Hosmer would play on Tuesday after an off day today. Today being Monday. And so I don't know. I guess it's a way to kind of get another backup in the mix. But I don't know. I really can't tell what the heck the point of this is. Like, Hendricks has been pretty good in the minors, but he hasn't been good in the majors. So that's a weird guy to go get. I guess it's depth. But the weirdest part is that the Royals are behind Toronto in the standings. And they just sent them a platoon option, a guy who can hit lefties, doesn't do much against righties, and isn't really good on defense, doesn't really run the base. But, I mean, he can fill a role off the bench. And that could be something that helps Toronto more than it ends up helping Kansas City down the line. So that's kind of a strange deal to trade for a team you're chasing, or trade with a team that you're chasing. So that's the weirdest part. But, I mean, it's also still Danny Valencia, who isn't really...
No one's going to call him an impact bat.
No. No. He's not. And, you know, it's not a... I don't know. It's such a weird trade that's out of nowhere. I don't really know what else to say about it.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what else to say either. I mean...
it's like, okay. It happened. Yeah,
it certainly did happen. Yes, it did.
It is a thing that happened.
I mean, I guess I don't know what their plan would be for Hendricks, because, like, I think the Royals are going to, without having, you know, heard a press conference or anything, I think the way they're going to try and spin this is, hey, Cologne is better than Valencia, so we got better there, and this Kratz fellow is better than Brett Hayes, so we got better there. And Liam Hendricks is someone who's put up good numbers in the minors, as Mike said, but hasn't done it in the majors, so maybe we can, you know, put him in our system and develop him, you know, because they have a little pitching cred now because they've developed a couple pitchers that have turned out all right with Danny Duffy and Yordano Ventura, so now they probably think that whatever they're doing is working and they can fix anybody. This is just me spitballing here.
Right.
About how they're going to try and spin this. But of course, what the Royals won't address, which are the questions that are raised, well, if you get better by having Christian Cologne instead of Danny Valencia, then one, why the hell did you sign Danny Valencia in the first place in the offseason? Two, why not, even if you did think Valencia was going to be better and you realized at one point that Cologne was better and he was a better option you wanted to go with, then why did you persist with Valencia up in the major leagues? So,
and if you just need to clear a spot, I mean, Raul Ibañez is just sitting there, just collecting.
Literally. Goblins.
I mean, he had a big hit here and there, but I mean, time's running out, and it's pretty obvious watching that guy. Ibañez can't hit lefties at all.
He doesn't.
He doesn't offer anything on defense or with his speed. He's not able to hit for average anymore and really doesn't have power. So, I mean, there's really not much point to have Ibañez on the roster. So why not, if you want to bring up Cologne, just get rid of Ibañez and put Cologne in that spot. And then you've got a guy to platoon with Moustakas. You have a guy to, be a utility guy with Cologne, and then you're fine. You can go around. But I don't know. I guess they had to do this move.
You know, it's almost like the Royals are trying to write the movie of this ascension to a World Series championship before it ever actually happens, which would actually be par for the course for this organization, because they love taking credit for things that they have not done yet. Yeah. So it's just like, I mean, Raul Ibañez, like that washed-up veteran who just been released, and the Royals, he comes back home to his former team, and everyone's like, hey, Raul, you're the good guy. You can do, you're going to be big for us. And then he comes in late in the ninth inning of a World Series game 7 and just, it's like that's
where it feels. You know who plays him in the movie?
Who does it?
Tony Danza.
Tony Danza, yes. Tony Danza is Raul Ibañez in A Royal Crown. So
perfect.
They should hire me when they put that trailer together.
Green light it.
Boom, it's done. Now, so as they've gotten with the trade, who knows, sometimes these trades are a portent of things to come. Sometimes it's just the Royals making a move to make a move, and sometimes, you know, it's the Royals trading who the hell did they trade? Kevin, what was that guy's name? For Umberto Quintero a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Chapman.
Kevin Chapman, thank you.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the Royals making a trade like that that doesn't seem really – they pawn it off as being necessary, but it's not really, and they just do it anyway. So who knows? We'll guess we'll see what happens. It's nothing that wows any of us. It's not necessarily a bad trade because Valencia wasn't really bringing much to the table. So it's more of a, huh? Like Mike said, why would they do this?
I don't get it, but whatever.
75% of the time I've given up questioning the Royals. The other 25% I continue to question. But at this point, sometimes you just got to let it fall off and just see where it lands.
That's the game, though. That's their game. That's what they want to do. They keep making weird moves and
just
expect us to just get fatigued by that.
That's exactly it, you know? It's almost rope-a-dope. Like it is the rope-a-dope. Eventually, you know, it's almost like all of the stuff they put in Kauffman Stadium. It's like we're going to have so many distractions out here that people don't even realize there's a game going on, but they still want to come out here. That's the whole draw, right?
So
whatever. Anyway.
We're on to you, Dayton.
We're on to you, Royals, Dayton Moore, and all your money-grubbing ways. Anyway, let's recap what's happened since the last show. If you remember our last show, if you're some of our faithful listeners out there, you will remember that we were quite dejected. I can't remember if that was the adjective I used to describe England in the opening, but it should have been, because we were dejected. Royals were, they had just lost, they had gotten swept right out of the All-Star break by the Boston Red Sox, and then they were coming off, had they lost that first game to the White Sox at that point?
Yeah, they lost their first four out of the All-Star break.
Yeah, so they swept the Red Sox and then lost to the White Sox, and we were about ready to call it on this season, and then what do you know, they come back and they win the next two games, they win the series against the White Sox, then they come out, I'm not gonna call it gangbusters because I don't know if the Royals have ever, except for that maybe 10 game stretch earlier in the season, the Royals have not gone gangbusters on anything, but they came out ready to play against the Indians and a team that they had to beat, that had overtaken them in the standings at that point, a team that they needed to take three or four from to get to jump back over them in the standings, not only in the division but in the wild card as well. And they did it. They took three of four. And it was a little bit sour by the fact they won the first three. Looked pretty good. I mean, they got some close calls, some extra innings, some heroics from Billy Butler.
Butler and Nori Aoki and
the Cleveland Moustakas and defense.
Ryan, yeah. Yeah, the Indians, God, they had the Moustakas play that everybody's seen by now, where Rayburn spikes it, and he gets that little league home run. They had that triple that Ibanez ended up on third, but the ball skipped past the cut, like the backup, and went into the dugout suite, and so that's an extra base. And then the next game, Aoki hits a triple and scores on a passed ball. So just right there.
I mean,
just crazy.
I was watching for that, Ibanez triple. I was on my iPad checking Twitter and stuff as I'm wont to do during the games. And Ibanez gets this triple, and I look up and I'm like, "Sweet, that's awesome!" Ibanez on third, you know, no outs or whatever there was. And then I look down and I look up again, and all of a sudden it's 4-1, and he scored. I'm like, "What the hell just happened?" And they showed a replay, and it still wasn't really clear. They didn't really explain it that well on the. On air, but I guess so I mean it was kind of strange, but hey, we'll take it. So and then that was all kind of all this goodwill of five straight victories for the Royals was soured a little bit as they got spanked by the Indians in the last game of the series on what was then Sunday, whenever you're recording it, so yesterday for us now when we're recording it, I'm sorry, whenever you're listening to it, it was Sunday. But yesterday for us now as we're recording. So now the Royals have a three-game set against the Twins coming up. And They need all three of these games desperately, not just because of the standings and the wild card and all that business, but because you look past the Twins, and no one should obviously ever look past any team. And I'm not saying the Royals are just going to win, but the Royals need to concentrate extra hard on these next three games, because if you do look past the Twins, then you've got arguably the hardest stretch of the season coming up, where you've got three games against Oakland, who's, by most accounts, top three teams in all of baseball the entire year, top to bottom, first, you know, from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Arizona, who's another solid team. And then after that, you've got San Francisco, who's been probably one of the other top three teams in the league all season. And then you've got a four-game set with Oakland again right after that. So you're looking at 10 games, 13 games against above-average competition, 10 of those 13 against two of the better teams in the league all season. So the Royals have to win. I'm sitting here at 53 and 51 right now. They have to win these next three games against the Twins, because Twins are a team that you should beat. They need to sweep them, get a little bit of a cushion, because if the Royals win five of the next 13 games, I would probably take that, if you tell me right now. I mean, coming up on this stretch here, Mike, what are your thoughts going up? I mean, how do you see the Royals faring against this? Because I'm not too optimistic right now, to be honest with you.
I mean, that is a really tough stretch. I kind of wish that sort of stretch would have been at the beginning of July, because it would make things a lot more clear. Because right now we're a couple days from the trade deadline, at least the non-waiver portion of it. And you could at least take the, you know, let's say if it's early July, the Royals come out of it and they actually do okay, and they're in decent shape coming out of that stretch, and then it's relatively easy the rest of the way. Well, then, you know, you can probably buy, and you're not worried as much about, you know, just selling off prospects for the sake of selling off prospects. Whereas at this stage, you know, once they get done with those, they're going to be in the middle of August. And that's going to be a little bit more murky, because then you've got about 6 weeks of season left. And, you know, if they're still only at 500, I mean, they're pretty much done playoff wise. I mean, that's just, anything can happen, but that's a lot of ground to make up in a short amount of time. And then by that point, they will be at a stage where they won't have a lot of leverage for the guys that they could probably get a good return on, like James Shields or Alex Gordon, if they chose to trade him, or Billy Butler, if he's still hitting well. Because at that point, you know, Shields would have 6 weeks of season left rather than 2 months. And that's a few starts that the trading team would miss out on. So it's, they'd be trading for less value in that asset, likewise any other player. And so it makes it tougher for teams to do that. Plus, there's also the problem of waivers and trying to get guys through. If you actually want to bring in, you know, if you want to trade James Shields to a certain team where you're going to get the best return, well, if someone claims him after the deadline, then you're pretty much blocked from trading with the team that you want to. And so it limits their options as well. So, you know, it's just a lot of things that, you know, by mid-August could really go wrong for the Royals if they're not looking like they're in a good playoff spot, you know, relative to other wild card teams. And then, you know, if they can't trade the guys that they would like to trade for return, if they were able to recognize that they were out of it. So, yeah, I kind of wish it was earlier, because then at least, you know, All-Star break, you can say, hey, the Royals survived that. They're still above 500. Maybe we can do something. The flip side is, well, you know, the way the schedule actually is, they have to basically go do it. And, you know, if they come out above 500 after it, then okay, then maybe you have something. But if they're not, they're kind of going to be stuck in no man's land. And that's probably worst case scenario, because then you don't get any return on any of those guys you could have sold off to teams who, you know, fared better. And you're also not going to make the playoffs, and you're going to be middle of the pack in the draft. So you're kind of just floating there in the middle. I mean, it's kind of tough to swallow. And as of right now, they're on an 83-win pace. So, you know, they've still got to pick it up anyway. So having this stretch of games against Oakland and San Francisco is just not – it's pretty rough timing for them. So I'm a little nervous about it.
What this reminds me of is – and you're not as big of a Chiefs fan, Mike, but it reminds me of all those Chiefs teams from the early 2000s. Like the Chiefs – in 2008 or 2007 was the first time they were just like really objectively bad. Before that, they were all media. They were winning between 6 and 10 games every year for, you know, roughly 10 years, basically from 98 to 2007. And it got them nowhere. And they were, like you said, they didn't get to the playoffs. They were in the middle of the draft for a bad pick. And they never gave up the idea that they were still contenders and did the smart thing and build for the future until it was too late. And by that time, next thing you know, they're 2-14. So that's kind of the ultimate fear, I think, here with these Royals is that, I mean, I don't think they're in quite the same shape, and it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison, but this idea that, as Mike was kind of discussing, well, you're kind of in that limbo where if you win 83 games, like, okay, yeah, that's great. You got another winning season. Fantastic. But you don't really get a high draft pick. You're losing James Shields, things like that. All these different things that – and you're losing an opportunity here because – and I heard this on the radio the other day that Seren Petro, I think, was talking about the Oakland A's. I feel like we talk about the A's a lot on this show, but they run a really good organization. So what are you going to do? But anyway, he said one of the things that he thinks Billy Beane is really good at is, you know, amongst other things, is recognizing when his team has a shot. And when his team's like this year, absolutely the A's have a shot. And so what they do, they went out and they gave up their best prospect to get Jeff Samardzija, you know, whereas if Billy Beane was general managing this Royals team, I think right now he would make some moves that would probably be unpopular, but 2015, 2016 would probably come back and end up being really valuable. So, you know, that's the thing that the Royals are, they're close enough that they're in contention, and Dayton Moore and the rest of the crew are just going to run with it. And I mean, you look at the standings right now and like, They're 5 games behind the Tigers. They're in second place. So if you just step back and say, okay, the Royals are in second place in the AL Central, like, oh, okay, that sounds good. You know, they got a shot at maybe even winning the division. They're probably in the wild card race. And, you know, I guess both those things are technically true. But then if you look throughout all of baseball, the Royals, as the second place team, have the furthest gap between them and the first place team of any division by 2 games. The next furthest gap is the Orioles have a 3-game lead over the Blue Jays in the AL East. Every other division race is 2 games or less away from second place to first place. So, you know, while it sounds kind of nice on the surface, the Royals have further to climb than literally anybody else at this point. So at least in terms of second place teams and looking for that wild card. So it's a tough situation to be in.
And the thing is, their prize, if they do get that second wild card, because they're going to, you know, the first wild card is going to be whoever doesn't win the AL West between Oakland and LA, who are just, They're pretty much going to be in, barring a huge collapse.
Yeah. Just a funny side note, the Mariners are a half game better than the Royals, and they're 11 and a half games out of first place. That's how good the A's and the Angels have been this year. But anyway, go ahead.
So that's your prize, is you get to go play against those guys. You get to go play either against probably the best-run organization in baseball, in the A's, if they happen to not win their division, which I think they will, or you get to go play against Albert Pujols and Mike Trout and a bunch of really good players and the pitching staff and everything else in the Angels. So Yeah. I mean, it's one game, so anything can happen, but I don't like the odds there. So it's pretty tough to see that as the prize. I mean, I'd still be happy about it, sure, because you have a shot. And if it's against the A's, we know how Billy Beane's stuff works in the playoffs. But I really wish the Royals would have done something earlier. Like, you know, when Beane, he made that trade on the 4th of July. And in doing so, he got about 3-4 extra weeks of Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill in that deal, which is, you know, that's just more starts that he gets with those guys. And if the Royals would have done that in late June and gone out and gotten another hitter, you know, maybe July and in those games around the All-Star break where they couldn't score any runs, maybe things go a little different. Maybe they're able to, you know, maybe they'd be 5 games up at this stage instead of 3 games above 500. You know, I would really advocate buying early if you feel like you have a shot. I mean, not like, you know, sell everything out. But if you can make an improvement early, yeah, I would say you should do it. And maybe they tried. Maybe teams try and other teams don't want to give up anybody. And maybe that's just kind of what it is. But, you know, I think that's something that they should have probably done if they didn't look at it. But they definitely need help. They definitely need to do something. And I think right now is probably their best opportunity to, you know, if they want any kind of shot, they need another hitter. And, you know, they've got to basically, like we talked a couple weeks ago, that in last year, 92 wins won the wild card. The year before, 93 wins got into the wild card. So the Royals right now, they basically would have to go like 40-18 to get to 93 wins. And that's asking a lot from a team with this kind of offense. And that's asking a lot of Billy Butler to continue to improve. And he has, you know, those 2 homers were just blasts. Hosmer was on a big hitting streak before he got hurt. Moustakas has shown a little bit of power. So maybe if those 3 improve, you know, it's almost like you gain something in some kind of acquisition, but they still need to do something with right field, because offensively, Nori Aoki and Jerod Dyson are basically the same player. You just get more value from Dyson because he's got better speed and better defense. But they still kind of need somebody who's, you know, going to be able to produce runs. And Dyson, I think the more he plays, I think he'll get exposed a bit. And Aoki really hasn't done much of anything. And so you've got to find some alternative to that. And I hope they're not waiting until after that series and then buy, you know, after that run against all those Western Division teams. And that's when they buy a hitter, because that's just going to be too late, I think. I think they got to do it now. Get him in the lineup. Yeah. Do it tonight. You know, I don't think they will, but they got to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. And it kind of reminds me of that poker adage, right, where you say if you sit down at the table and you can't identify who the fool is in 5 minutes, then it's you, type of thing. Well, it's not exactly the same line of thinking, but kind of one of those things where if you have to wait until the trade deadline to decide if you're in it and you're a buyer, then you're not a buyer. You know what I mean? Like, you, yeah. That's why I think that was kind of more or less a point that you were getting at with the comment about how, you know, Billy Beane saw it early and went for it earlier than the trade deadline, because lots of people like to say deadline spur action. Well, you know, sometimes they delay action too, because it gives you a fixed point in time that you can say, well, let's target that day. Let's wait.
Yeah, let's see where we are mid-July.
Because maybe we'll improve and we don't need to give up anything. You know, maybe we'll not. Again, comes back to this mantra that we've seemed to have this season of optimism is not a strategy. Well, you know, you can't go there. You can't do it like that. You have to say, okay, this is what we need. Who cares about what may happen? You know, this is what we need right now. We need to make this team better today, not in a month from now, not in 2 weeks from now, not 3 days from now. Today, what are we going to do? What can we do? What are our options? And like you said, we don't know. Maybe they're out there. Maybe they've been working the phones mercilessly, trying to pawn off Sean Manaea and Kyle Zimmer on anybody who will give them anything that resembles a right field bat, and nobody's taken. I don't know. We don't know. But, it seems like from what we've seen and what we know of the organization and what we've seen in the past and what's happened, it doesn't necessarily seem like that's the way it's going to be, or that's the way it has been. So,
And they've got to, they got to do something, because you're already seeing teams ahead of them making improvements. Detroit went out and they traded for Joaquin Soria. So that gives them another option in the bullpen, where Jabba Chamberlain's been pretty good. Joe Nathan hasn't been very good. So Soria really kind of stabilizes that a bit. And that's just going to help Detroit. They're doing this. They're kind of vulnerable because Miguel Cabrera has not had a Miguel Cabrera kind of season. It's still really good, but it's not an MVP level season. Justin Verlander is not having a great season. It's still a really good season, but it's not a Cy Young / MVP type of season. And, the Royals really aren't able to take advantage of that. They're still 5 games back, and they're still seemingly not able to make improvements with their lineup and with their roster to try to catch up. And, it's going to be the same with other teams. Seattle, whether or not this is an improvement or not, they traded for Kendry Morales. So they recognized they needed a bat, and they made the trade. And, other teams are going to do that too over the next few days. And the Yankees went out and traded for like Brandon McCarthy. They traded for Chris Capuano. I think they traded for John Danks today, I think I saw. There was somebody else. They've made a lot of moves in the last couple of days because they kind of see it. They kind of see where they're at. The Angels got Houston Street. Mm-hmm. And the Royals' big move is to go get Eric Kratz and Liam Hendricks. So,
woohoo!
And they signed Raul Ibanez a couple weeks ago, so we can count that too, I bet. That's what it is.
Well, he played by Tony Danza.
Right. So, former Angel, too, just like Tony Danza is who used to be Mel Clark.
Yes, indeed.
But, I don't know. Guys are out there. Alex Rios is out there. He'd probably be an okay fit. Marlon Byrd's out there. He might be a fit. Josh Willingham, Ben Zobrist. Those are kind of the guys I'd be looking at. They all have their warts. They're all, there's no perfect guy out there other than Giancarlo Stanton, who the Royals aren't going to get, and they're not going to try to get him because they'd have to pay top 10 prospects to get him.
Yeah, and, it appears the Royals are being somewhat selective, which I can appreciate because, for the wrong deal, we would get on there. We would highly, very strongly criticize them if they gave up, Raul Mondesi and Miguel Almonte for Marlon Byrd. We would probably say, that was a little bit too much, or something. So it appears that they're truly evaluating things, which I appreciate and I will give them credit for. But at the same time, they do have to do something. And again, they're kind of in that weird limbo where, and it's kind of like we've talked about before, where it's different for the Royals than I think 90% of the other organizations out there, where they're sitting here and saying, okay, we have to do something. We need to make a move, but we can't give up too much because we're the Royals and we want to keep these young guys that we can control. And at the same time, though, it's 29 years of pressure that have been building towards this moment. We made that huge trade 2 years ago for this moment, and we're falling flat on our face. What do we do? It's tough. I've said this before. I don't envy Dayton Moore. We've been very critical of him on this show, but never have we tried to make it seem like his job is easy. Cause it's definitely difficult, and especially in times like these where. This is kind of a thing where, and it makes it easier for us as podcasters, because he's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. Because if he doesn't move, we're like, why didn't Dayton Moore go out there and make a move? Well, maybe we don't know. Maybe we don't know that the only moves he could make involved giving up those two prospects I mentioned, or two of the other prospects that we wouldn't give up, and we'd go up there and say, "I can't believe you gave that much for Marlon Byrd. That was way too much," and things like that. So, you know, it's an unfortunate scenario, but you know, I'm not the GM, so he needs to, he's the guy that has to make it work, and you know, hopefully he can pull something off, but it doesn't appear that it's likely at this point. It's at least nothing of impact.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic. I don't know what to expect. It's they're in such a weird spot, and it was a similar spot last year too, where they were like, I think it was a week before the trading deadline, and it looked, you know, a little bleak, and there were articles popping up about what can Ervin Santana get in trade. And then they go and they win like six in a row, get to the break, trade for Justin Maxwell, and they ride it out. And so, okay, you know, they could have gotten something for Santana, but they ended up winning games. And same kind of thing now where they, you know, they win five in a row and, you know, start to hit a little bit, and now there's hope again. And, you know, I want them, you know, I'd love for them to go 40 and 18 or whatever they need to do. That would be awesome. But at the same time, this is not a team that's structured to go on a run like that. And so I've got to temper that hope and that idealism, because it's just not how it's going to work with this team. Unless, you know, a lot of guys suddenly get a lot better fast, or they make a lot of moves that nobody expects them to make. And the likelihood of either or both of those happening is pretty slim.
And it's funny that you mention how the team isn't structured to go on a big run like that. And it's funny because New Orleans have almost admitted as much that they're a team that's structured to win a lot of close ball games, because with the bullpen and the speed and the defense, you know, a lot of the bunting, a lot of stealing, all that kind of stuff. Seems like that's what the Royals are really going for, at least what they went for when constructing the team. And yet, you know, they have one of the worst records of in close, you know, one run ball games. I mean, they're what, 10-20, I think, something to that effect.
Something around and there, yeah. It's probably changed over the last couple days.
Yeah, but so I mean, that is
you know, it's
that's
really
unfortunate.
Weird. Yeah.
If you are going to be, I'm actually surprised that they're having as good a season as they are. Consider that fact, because last year they played above their standard winning percentage in one run games. And you look at the teams that have had a similar rise to the Royals and kind of come out of losing losing cultures, if you will, like the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Baltimore Orioles. Those teams have come in, and when they have their breakout year, it's the one-run games that really does it, and they have a great record in one-run games. So the fact that the Royals are – I mean, it's actually almost a testament to some of the aspects of the team. Because they've been so putrid offensively and they've been so awful in one-run games, and they've still got a winning record, and they're still, you know, still in the race, theoretically speaking. So, you know, it's kind of cool, I guess, if you look at it like that.
It's weird for them to be there in spite of that one-run record. It's really kind of weird. So I don't know what to make of it. It is a very weird team, and it's a team that at various points I really don't like. Like, I like individual players, but as a team, I just really don't like it. It's just like,
no.
You know, there's not a lot of situations where I feel like, okay, cool, we got it here. It's more like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Pirates last year, I'm obviously not a Pirates fan, but when I saw the Pirates last year and, you know, saw what they're doing is what I mean, or what they did, it was one of those things where as they were going along on the season, I was like, okay, you know, this team's legit. They've got legitimate superstars. They're a threat. You know, I would be nervous playing them. But I don't feel like if you're a fan of baseball and you don't have any allegiance to the Royals, I don't feel like you look at this team and you say, oh, man, this is a legit team now. You know, you look at them and say, oh, they're decent. They're not going to roll over like they did 5 years ago, but they don't scare me. Is ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty much it.
Pretty much it. With that, we're going to take a break here really quick, and then we asked, and you answered by asking a few questions. So when we get back from the break, we're going to trot out a few questions there and see if we can give some completely asinine answers, because we're pretty good at that on the show. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick and your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And as a reminder, don't forget another member of our sponsor family, Baseball Reference Play Index. If you type in the promo code Royals, you'll get a discount, a $6 discount. Normally it's $36 for a subscription to the Play Index, but with the promo code Royals used from listening to this very show, you'll only have to pay $30 for a one-year subscription to the Baseball Reference Play Index, where you can literally find any stat that your heart would desire. It's a fantastic program. We all use it here on this show and on our Royals podcast network of shows. It's a great product. We used it before Baseball Reference Play Index was a sponsor, and we'll probably use it after, but hopefully it doesn't end, because we like having them as a sponsor, and hopefully they'll continue the relationship. Now, that being said, as I said before the break, we asked and you answered with a bunch of questions. So I don't know if I'd say a bunch, but we've got some questions. We've got some questions that you asked, so we're going to try and give an answer here, Mike. Why don't you start us off? What's the first question we have in our mailbag? We need a little mailbag sound effect.
Right.
Like the Paul Harvey page turn.
Do-do-do-do. Yeah, basically, because I am moving, I don't have a ton of time because I got to clean this stuff out. So rather than, you know, what we would normally do, you know, putting in a lot of research and focus on a theme, we're just going to be a little goofy. So if you really don't like goofy, and there's going to be some baseball questions, but there's going to be, you know, some goofiness too. So if you don't like goofiness, you know, you go find one of the other shows on the network. And
if you don't like goofy, how are you still listening to shows?
There's that too. That's fair. Fair statement as well. So without further ado, we did throw it out there for you to send emails or tweets our way. And anytime you have an idea, you know, you can send us an email at kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. We welcome your feedback, your questions, your comments, your ideas, whatever. You can also just send us a message on Twitter, either myself at Michael Engel or Jeff at The Jeff Report, or our show account, KC Baseball Vault. You can also use the hashtag. If you can figure out what a hashtag is, you can use that
that's
too.
That's something different, the hashtag.
Yeah, it is. Totally different. Use the hashtag KCBBV, and we'll take a look at it. We'll try to make this a regular thing if we get enough feedback. But the first thing, we actually got an email from Kevin pronounce his name.
I think it's French. It's Scobé.
Kevin Scobé. All it says is subject hashtag team pop. with the subject or GTFO. So this came up on Twitter. It was Team Pop versus Team Soda, the regional dialects and whatnot. Down in Texas, everything's just Coke. It can be a Pepsi product. It's still a Coke. But, I mean, I'm Team Soda. I used to be Team Pop growing up. And then I think my teenage rebellion kicked in, and I became Team Soda about 17 or 18 years old. I think I was brainwashed by coming to a liberal college and probably shamed everybody in my hometown in Western Kansas by doing so. So they're all Team Pop. I'm Team Soda. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I hope you're on the right side here.
I feel like I'm slowly converting to Team Soda. However, the greater majority of my life, and I still consider myself this way, I have been Team Coke. So I've been born and raised in Missouri, but for whatever reason, my family always called it Coke. I remember it was always so confusing to me because I would go over to somebody's house and they'd say, hey, what do you want to drink? And I'd be like, oh, I'll have a Coke. And they'd say, Pepsi, all right? And I'm like, yeah, I didn't specify. So I never understood, but you know, then obviously once I got old enough to comprehend names and branding and all that kind of stuff, I was like, oh, you know, Coke is, you know, an actual brand. To me, it was like Kleenex, which of course is an actual brand, but something that was colloquially accepted as a tissue.
Sure. So, and I think that's more widespread that way too, that people will call it Kleenex rather than facial tissue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is definitely more widespread. Yeah. And I think they've done, because there's like a law that if something is so used, so colloquially accepted like that, that then you lose your trademark on it, right? So it happened to Xerox, I believe. You know, you Xerox something, like, well, Xerox is a brand. So, like, if you noticed, Federal Express changed their name to FedEx a little while ago. Right?
Like, yeah.
You know, within the last 10 years or so. And the reason they did that was because they were risking losing any sort of trademarked rights to the term FedEx, because so many people were saying FedEx it. So they literally changed their name from Federal Express to FedEx so that they could keep those trademark rights. Little bit of interesting tidbit for you there.
I did not know that.
Bet you weren't expecting that when you tuned into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, now were you?
Also, if you look at the logo for FedEx, between the E and the X, it forms a little arrow, I think.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Let's pull this up here.
Yeah.
FedEx logo.
While you pull that up, I'm going to go to the next question. This is from Twitter.
It does.
Yeah. Weird.
I've never noticed that before.
I never noticed that. BuzzFeed's good for something.
That is awesome. All right.
Next question comes from Dave Lesky, our friend over at the Pine Tar Press podcast.
Dave Lesky.
I haven't read these yet, so it's hi, Mike. First time caller, long time listener. Did you ever get that rat? Let's move on to the next one.
Let's keep moving.
Thanks, Lesky. This one is from Sean Harstad on Twitter. He's at Harstad, H-A-R-S-T-A-D, 2-3. Question, this came on Saturday. Are the Royals ever going to lose again? Sadly, they did. They lost.
However, at the time, I would have said no. So it shows what I know about baseball.
Yep. This question comes from the fake Ned. Hey, guys, big fan, mostly because, you know, I'm fat.
Hey, oh, get it, question. Big?
What is Lesky's problem? We don't know.
We do not know.
We've tried to figure that out for a long time.
If we knew, we'd stop it. Because
You know that scene in, I think it's American Pie, I think it's the first one, and they kind of ask themselves, why are we friends with that guy when they're talking about Stifler?
Yes.
That's kind of the thing. That's kind of applies to fake Ned, too. So I don't know why we're friends with him.
Yes, it certainly does. I don't know what he's doing around here, but yeah. He keeps showing up. He's like that Gordon character in those stupid Sprint commercials. Why do you keep inviting him? He just shows up.
Also, Judy Greer, call me.
Also, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Next question is...
As we move along.
Yeah, as we just move along. This comes from North Mo Royal. That's Lance. Good friend.
Old Lance, good buddy of the show here.
Absolutely. It says, hey, fellas, can we have a segment on how future Mrs. A1, that is his wife, And I brought the power back to Kauffman last night. That was they were at the game where Butler hit the first home run, and so that was pretty cool. If that's what it takes, we will put them up in Kauffman every day of the rest of the season.
Yes, we can get a Kickstarter funded for that. No problem.
You probably could. It'd be interesting to see what you could do on that.
If we can bear that out with some quantifiable proof, I think we could raise the funds.
Yeah. Another question from Lesky. It says, do you think the Royals have what it takes to get Mike Trout? Is Aaron Crow and Christian Colon enough? Which, he's just goofing around, but that does bring up an important point, especially this time of year, about like value of players and your team's prospects versus, you know, going for big names. Because you'll see this. There's a couple accounts out there on Twitter now that are like bad MLB comments or bad trade ideas or something like that. And it's basically all these ridiculous things. My rule of thumb is, one, if you ask me to construct a trade, like through Twitter or whatnot, I'm not going to give you a combo. I'm going to try to avoid it as much as possible because I know that I can't get over my bias towards Royals prospects. So I'm going to overvalue Kyle Zimmer, even though other teams have guys very similar in makeup, production, you know, backstory, and future projection to Kyle Zimmer. But I'm still going to choose Kyle Zimmer over them. So I'm going to think he has more value in a trade, and it's going to make it tough for me to come up with an accurate trade proposal. So my other rule of thumb is that if the trade seems like a real slam dunk, you know, I'll take that in a heartbeat deal, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. So so that's what Leslie's kind of playing around with there.
Yeah. But to take his question to the furthest point that it can go.
Sure.
Do the Royals have enough to get Mike Trout? I actually say yes. However, the resulting question from that would
what
be,
age is Mike Trout when they get him?
Well, there's that. Is he Raul Ibanez's age? But then there's also, if the Royals acquired Mike Trout now, would they then have enough players left to form a real team? To which I say no.
Right.
Because you would probably have to give up James Shields, Danny Duffy, Yordano Ventura, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Sal Perez, and at least three of the top five prospects. And you might get Mike Trout.
And the Fountains.
You'd have to give the Fountains, ship them to Arizona via helicopter by the next game. Would most and fill their machine with soda for the next 3 years.
It's true.
That is, we'll call that a starting point for Mike Trout. So, you know, if Mike Trout thinks that he and Aaron Crow can win a World Series, then they're certainly welcome to try and work that out. But
that would be something if they could do
that. Would be something.
This is an actual question that has more relevance today. This comes from Jack, who is Royal DUF. Okay, seriously, why is Francisco Pena still in AAA? You know, Pena was in the AAA All-Star Home Run Derby. He's got, I think, like 19. I haven't checked his stats recently. But, I mean, he's hitting down there. And he even got a brief call-up. He played one inning, filling in here and there. I don't know why. I don't know why he's still in AAA. I guess my best guess would be that they want to keep him down there to play every day, but I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a backup guy. And that would make this move today for Eric Kratz just crazy. It's even more weird when you look at it that way. So I don't know why. I don't know why he's still in AAA. I think, you know, he's certainly hit enough down there to be in the big leagues. He's already on the 40-man roster, so you don't have to do anything with that. You've already called him up. You know, you've already burned an option year from him anyway, so why not do something with him?
Yeah, he's to answer your question, he's got 22 home runs at this point.
Oh, well.
And he's OPSing 867. So, I mean, that's a solid number right there. That obviously won't translate directly to the major leagues, but
it shows something. Certainly, probably, I'm sure he could outperform Eric Kratz. I mean, I guess there's an element of they don't want to bring in a rookie guy to back up Sal. But I think if Sal Perez got hurt, I mean, Pena's probably the guy they would at least probably switch between now Eric Kratz and Francisco Pena back and forth.
Yeah.
I would think they'd probably go halfway. I mean, that's kind of what they did when Sal was hurt last time when they had Pena and Humberto Quintero. They basically played like two on, two off with those guys until Sal came back. So I don't know. I guess that's what you have. If you really, really want Francisco Pena in the big leagues, you've got to root for a Sal Perez injury. So probably not.
I'd say have fun in the minors.
Yeah, I think
Francisco.
That's okay. I think this will be our last one. There was some news as John Heyman reported that Sal Perez changed agents, which we kind of talked about his contract the week before, just briefly, and how his contract is so ridiculously team friendly, and now he's changed agents, which is odd because I don't know what that agent's going to do unless they are going to try to renegotiate something, kind of how we hinted last week that they might try to do something to the end of those years, you know, into that deal.
Yeah. Now,
so, I don't know. It's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's I don't know much about the agency, but Lance Northmo Royal was again asking, what does that mean? And I'm not really sure. I mean, maybe this agency is better with doing endorsements and Sal wants to be more marketable. I don't know. Or it could be something that they are gearing up towards some future negotiation with his, you know, current deal.
Yeah, my inclination is that it means very little, because I think if you look at the collective bargaining agreement that the Major League Baseball Players Association has with Major League Baseball, the baseball players own Major League Baseball, unlike any other players own any other union. Like, compare football. NFL is the hands-down most popular sport in America with a bullet, right? Just money hand over fist. And you look at the contracts. It's a completely different game. I understand that. But you look at the contracts that those guys sign versus the one signed in baseball. I mean, okay, Jamal Charles signed a five-year, $32 million contract a few years ago, and he just renegotiated and signed. He got 18 additional million dollars for re-upping on his contract for two more years, which still spread over his contract. It ends up being, you know, $7-8 million a year, right? For the second best running back in the league, one of the top 10, arguably, probably top 10, well, according to NFL's latest rankings, top 10 players in the league. So that's a starting point for something, right? Where then you have even Peyton Manning, right, getting $20 million, literally the best quarterback on the planet. And then you've got Clayton Kershaw, who signs a $30 million contract for 10 years, and it's all guaranteed. If Jamal Charles or Peyton Manning gets hurt tomorrow, they have some portion of their contract that's guaranteed. Usually it's not even half. And those, they get that money, and then they get shipped out because, hey, you're done, sorry, next. But Clayton Kershaw, if he gets injured, you know, hey, here's still a paycheck. You're Bobby Bonilla for the next 10 years because we're still paying you. You know, but so it's interesting. And I think the flip side of that, which we don't often see, is a situation like Sal Perez where I don't know that I've ever – I'm trying to think – and maybe the closest you could say would be someone like Evan Longoria, who signed a contract after being like a week in the major leagues. And I don't remember the details of that particular contract, but I'm pretty sure he played most of that out. And, you know, maybe the last year or so, maybe 2 years before, is when he renegotiated and signed a new deal. But I think he also just signed a new deal, but I think that's his third deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So point being, because of the nature of the contracts and that baseball contracts are fully guaranteed, you don't see, I cannot think of a single player that's ever held out like you do in football. You know, I mean, you've had players that just don't play for an entire season because they're upset with how their contract is.
Even like Emmett Smith years and years ago, like missed six games because he was just holding out.
Yep. And a guy, I think his name was John Hanna. He was an offensive lineman for the Patriots back in the 80s when they were pretty good and they were making the playoffs. They made a Super Bowl one year. And I remember Bill Simmons had an article about it, and he was just, you know, talking about how he interviewed John Hanna, and the guy's just like, hey, man, you know, I caught a lot of flack for that, but I'm going to be honest, you know, I don't really regret it because it needed to happen, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. But it's so interesting to me to kind of think of it from that standpoint. And I don't know that Sal Perez has much leverage, unfortunately, to do anything with his contract. Now, I think the Royals, in an effort of goodwill, would come to the table and try and renegotiate and give him more money. But, I mean, if they don't reach an agreement, it's not like, you know, Justin Houston could hold out for the Chiefs this year. You know, it's not like that for Sal Perez. I suppose he could, but I'm pretty sure the Baseball Players Union would probably shut that down, because once players would start holding out, then the owners are going to want more stuff back. They're going to want non-guaranteed contracts. They're going to want less money on the contract. So the baseball players have too good of a thing going to risk any sort of a trend of them starting and holding out, because if then they hold out, then the owners get a little bit of leverage in terms of saying, okay, well, we want, if we're going to acquiesce because players are going to hold out, then we're going to hold something back. So this is a long, long-winded answer to a seemingly simple question where, you know, I don't know that it has much effect, but I mean, there's a lot of factors at play here, and I'll be real interested to see how this plays out, because Sal Perez is like a league MVP caliber bona fide superstar on this team here, and he will not be getting paid like one for the next 6 years. So that it's really going to be interesting, and it probably doesn't mean much now, but it's also not insignificant that he changes agents, and it'll definitely be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it could be something by the end of the contract if the Royals want to tack on some extra years. You know, this new agency might be like, hey, you know, we're gonna test the market and see what we can get. So, you know, by that time he'll be about 30, and he'll still have, you know, another big contract out of him. I think Brian McCann's about 31. He just got a big deal from the Yankees, so Sal would be in line for a similar kind of thing.
Yep. So, all right. Well,
that's all we got.
I think that's all we got for today. So with that, we will end this show. This has been Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And don't forget, go to Baseball Reference, Play Index, use the promo code ROYALS, get $6 off your one-year subscription to the Baseball Reference Play Index. Fantastic tool for any stat heads like myself or Michael Engel. We've got it. It can give you anything that you can think up. They can find it for you in seconds. It's a good site. Go there. And I'll tell you what, after you're done looking up all the nerdy statistics and you need a break, you can head on down to Kelly's in Westport, grab yourself a beer. Who knows? You might see one of us there. And you'll probably say, please don't talk to me, but you might see us there. So, yeah, it is true. So with that, we'll end the show. For Michael Engel, I'm Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for coming in and listening. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.